It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 364. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me suggestions for future show topics or any tech question. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. I did not get a chance to download and save the voicemails that you've left this week, so we'll play them next week. So I do have a couple. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. You can get links to all of the great archives for the show, and they are linked at the wiki, which is mtswiki.com, and a great site, and that's maintained by Citizen X in the chat, and hosted by Winston Wolf, who you know. I thank them so much for all their hard work. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MikeTechShow. Send me a friend request on Facebook, and that's facebook.com/MikeTechShow. I have a great show lined up where I want to follow up on a couple outstanding questions and some problems that I've talked about in the past that I've resolved. And then I want to get to some email. The first thing, and I'm not sure which show I mentioned this on, I had a new client where their server was spontaneously rebooting every other day. They were a client only for a couple days, last Friday morning. And anybody who listened to last week's show in the post show knows that I was hoping for a easy Friday, a Friday not filled with problems and clients calling. So early in the morning, I awake to my cell phone ringing. It's the new client. Their server completely failed. They cannot even start it. So I quickly shower and get dressed, and I'm out Friday morning, and I'm over to the client. It's an HP ML350 server. It's a few years old, and they've let the warranty lapse. It was not their fault. It was the IT support that I replaced. They did a poor job of letting the client know and stay informed of when the support was expiring. And keep that in mind if you're supporting someone. You got to take ownership of when does their domain expire, when does all of the hardware contracts. You got to make sure that you know when they're expiring and who they're with so you can stay on top of that. And then go into your calendar, whatever calendar you use, and put reminders in there that's a month before the date of expiration with that client so you can be alerted to when they're going to expire. Keep your client in the loop. It's only going to be better, and they're going to love you for it. So now I got to deal with an HP server that's out of warranty, and I work with support, and we determine that it's a power supply. Now, they have dual power supplies. What are the odds of both of those power supplies failing? Or did one fail, and they didn't know it? And then the second one failed, and that's what killed everything? Not sure. I just inherited this client. I work with HP, and we get them to overnight the hot pluggable power supply with a Saturday delivery. Since it's plug and play and it's so easy to put in, my client said, look, have them send it to my house, you know, to at their house, and they were going to go over and put it in. The office is so close to where I live. I said, if you have any problem, call me on my cell phone. I will come right over and help you out. They got the power supply, they plugged it in the server, it powered up, everything's good, and that was the problem all along. It was a faulty power supply, and I now have them as a regular client, as a retainer client, because the person that I replaced, the previous IT support, they didn't follow up as to why the server was rebooting. They didn't dig deep enough and troubleshoot the problem. So now they're my client and I'm going to take care of them. That's what you have to do. You got to be responsive. You got to make sure you solve problems. You can't leave them lingering, because if you do, guess what? You're going to lose them as a client. Very important. And that's why I wanted to share that story. A couple comments on the website. I forgot to put a link to the registry edit that has to be made when a system is infected. You clean the system and then you can no longer run executables after the infection. There's a registry fix that you must merge into the registry. I have a link. It will be in the show notes because a few of you have asked for that link and I have neglected to put it in the show notes. It'll be there this week. So I just wanted to mention that. Question that came up today, one of the strangest email problems that I've ever ran into, and I don't have a solution yet, and I'm going to throw it out there. My client has several devices where they send and receive email from. They have a Windows machine where they have Outlook. They have their iPad. They have their iPhone. And they have a MacBook Pro. The MacBook Pro is running just the default Mac mail client. Google Apps, Gmail is their email, and they have that for, they're using IMAP to get their mail through Google Apps. Here's the problem, and I've duplicated this. I'm stunned. When they send a mail message to someone else who's on their exact domain, so let's say their domain is abccorp.com. They send an email, and let's say the person's Sally at abccorp.com. When she sends an email to Mary at abccorp.com, they don't get the message. But if she sends a message to anybody else in the world or anybody else on Gmail or on any other domain, they get the message. It shows up in their sent items. Where does that message go? Because I looked in spam. I've looked in junk mail. I have looked everywhere. I don't understand. And only from this MacBook Pro. Here's what they can do. If they go on the web on the same computer and log in to the Gmail on the web for Google Apps and send that message, it gets there. It's only from the MacBook. It's not an Exchange server. It's a, someone says, turn on message tracking. Absolutely. By the way, if this was happening from an Exchange server, I would have put message tracking on, and that's a great tip. But because this is Google Apps, why is it only from the Mac Mail client? Any other client, it absolutely works. I want to know if there's an anomaly with Mac Mail and IMAP with a Google Apps. If they pick to send it from their Gmail account using the same computer, it works. It can't be DNS related, because if the same client, if they send a message and instead of from abccorp.com domain, they send it from their Gmail account using the same mail client, the mail gets delivered. Very weird. I repeated this today, and I was stunned that I thought for sure there was a problem with the configuration of the Mac mail, or that this message, I swore it was being caught in a spam filter somewheres. I am completely stumped. So if you have any ideas, I will listen to anything and any suggestion. Email me at miketechshow@gmail.com. I really appreciate it. All right, on to some email. This is from Mark. This is a show 363 comment on the printer network fix from last week. Mike, glad to see you fixed the thin client printer problem. Just thought I'd let you know that the corporate IT policy at a former employer was that any printer, including any home printers that may be connected to a PC, connecting to the corporate network must, one, be supplied or on the approved list. Boy, this sounds like the company I came from. It's exactly what we did to cut down on the tech support issues for this. Two, or be submitted for approval. To be approved, drivers for the printer would be installed on the network and added to the network's driver bank. The driver bank could be accessed by anyone logged onto the network and contain drivers for installation of all devices approved by corporate IT and included the version for any OS approved by corporate IT with very few exceptions. That is, yes, that is the policy, but this company happened to be a not-for-profit company, very small, and I've tried to accommodate them, and this was one of those rare circumstances that I had to go through this, and it will probably never come up again. But I understand, and if you're with a large company, you cannot support every printer made. It's impossible. You got to cut off and say, I'm only going to support printers that are on an approved list, because you got to be worried of what your IT support costs are. And you just cannot support everything under the sun out there. So depending on how large your company is, or the company you're associated with, or that you're supporting or helping or working for, your policies are going to vary. And this one, we were a little open because, you know, they're small and they had this particular need, which was a local printer that they wanted to print to from logging on using remote desktop on terminal server. As anybody knows who had to support terminal server printing, it's a nightmare. Here we go. Another printer's question. Hi, Mike. I've been listening to your printer problems over the past few weeks and came across an interesting company called Alagus, A-L-A-G-U-S, that has a lot of print management software available. Give it a try, as they also have some freeware programs. I will have a link in the show notes. Absolutely great suggestion. This looks promising for some printer help. Ustream question from Pat, and he says, thanks for all your continued efforts to put on a great show. Even though I am a longtime listener, the material is over my head at times. Still, I can follow enough to learn and use most of the material. I have a need to place video files online for members of our trade association to view. I also want to have longer than 10 minutes. It sounds like you have done this with Ustream. Please let me know if this will work. One, get Webcam Max to capture the video I have created with Premiere Elements to broadcast to Ustream. Two, set up a Ustream account. Three, play through Webcam Max. I have read up on Ustream, but am not certain about how to keep a video on their site. Does anything I play automatically save on the site? It sounds like I do not need to use their software console product. Is that correct? Any other tips? Thanks so much. I have a lot of advice on this. One, you don't have to use Webcam Max. The reason why I use it is it's easier for me to switch between multiple camera views. I also can switch between displaying my desktop or a portion of the desktop. So Webcam Max is very convenient. If you're going to use it, I recommend buying the unlimited lifetime license. It's like $69 or $79. Well worth it. And you get unlimited free upgrades. That's one. Two, to set up a Ustream account, it's free. But remember, there's ads scrolling on the bottom. So when you set up a Ustream account, which I think you should do to test and see if this will work for you, because it's not going to cost you anything. Once you get their console up, which is free, you can start recording your broadcast. There are limits. The broadcast can only be 3 hours in length. It will stop recording at 3 hours. You can save it. And once you save it and it's under 3 hours, you get to save it and give it a description. There's no commitment on Ustream's part for how long they're going to host it. So I just do that as a convenience for people who want to see my raw video recording of the podcast and they can't make it to the live show. I offer a link to the Ustream saved video that I'm recording right this minute as a nicety for listeners if they want to catch the raw recording, because when you listen to my audio podcast, it's the edited podcast where it's nice and no mistakes or very few mistakes. But often during the podcast, I do stop the recording, but I don't stop the Ustream recording. So you get to see everything live, all the mistakes, all the problems, all the issues, and my interaction with the chat. So you do get that, where that's lost on the normal podcast. Now, will that work for you? And do you mind ads going across the bottom of your screen, which will be saved in the recording? Be careful. I'm not sure if that's going to meet the requirements, but if it does, then that's the way to do it. Just set up an inexpensive camera, set up the free Ustream account, get Webcam Max, play it, save it, go back, take a look at it, see how it works, and if it meets your needs, then you're dead on, Pat, for exactly what you're going to try. So I hope that helps. And let me know if you have any other questions or anything that I can help with. This is from Eric, and he has a link to installing updates faster. And this is the WSUSoffline.net. So download.WSUSoffline.net. I've linked this a few times, but it doesn't hurt mentioning it again. It's a great way for you to get all of your updates and be able to apply them at one shot rather than having to wait on the network. Interesting. Depending on the bandwidth, I found that sometimes it's easier to just let it rip. Just let it connect, go to Windows Update, and just let it download all the updates. Sometimes that's faster than some of the programs that you have all the updates and it's got to go through every one and check to see whether it's going to apply it or not. Do you know sometimes that can actually be longer than the actual download process depending on your bandwidth? If you have a large pipe to the internet with your client or with whatever system you're going to work on, it might be easier to just click on Windows Update and download them that way. But if you have limited bandwidth and lots of updates to apply, it does make sense to have an offline repository to be able to go to for the Windows updates, especially if you're doing multiple machines and limited bandwidth. Certainly, that's the way to do it. This is from Christian, and he says, recording a meeting on the cheap. Hello, Mike. My organization of visually impaired people wants to record their twice annual meetings. I've managed to talk them into using Ustream for the recording part that can be viewed after the fact. What's the minimum requirements to do this? The meeting attendees share a microphone and one is on the podium. How to hook that into a computer as well as into the hearing loop? A cheap web camera aimed at the podium should do the trick for video, since that's not the main point. I agree. To get the audio, run a second microphone and extend it from the computer that has the account and the log on to the internet. I would have a notebook somewhere off to the side in front of the podium, a web camera, point it, connect to Ustream from that notebook. Now, to get the audio, you're going to have to run a cable from the computer, from the microphone input, or however you're going to rig the microphone. That's going to be the complex thing. Getting the microphone, which could be a double microphone. You have a microphone for the room that someone's talking to for the presentation, and then a second microphone that's only used for the recording to Ustream. That can be done, and it can be done very inexpensively. And you can get one of those lavalier lapel mics. They're inexpensive. They're like $20, $29 from Amazon. There's lots of great places where you can work with an inexpensive microphone with a long cord. That's, I think, a great idea for, as you mentioned, recording on the cheap. This is from John. Mike, I wrote you last week on trying to solve a problem on my son's computer. As a summary, I replaced 11 capacitors on his motherboard that went bad. When I put the machine back together, it began to boot but reported a system file problem that I was trying to fix, but it was running very, very slowly. I thought part of the problem was his system disk, which was 500 gig and it was 90% capacity. So I installed a 250 gig disk into his system and moved his videos and music over to it, freeing up about 140 gigs on the system drive. Unfortunately, the system was still running horribly slow. Yes, space was not the problem here. I ran msconfig and deselected almost everything that made a very marginal improvement. I next ran CCleaner, which found a number of problems which I had it fix. Still no improvement. I picked up a spare hard drive to try a clean install. I put Windows 7 Ultimate 64-bit on the drive, and the machine was still horribly slow. When I checked the performance monitor, all four processors were running at 100% with only the operating system running. Running into desperation, I pulled out my Ubuntu CD and installed version 10.04 onto the new drive. To my surprise, it ran fine. The system did not run slow, and the processors hummed along at 1 to 2% load with only the OS running. The only thing I could think was the version of Ubuntu I installed was 32-bit and not 64-bit. I thought the motherboard had obtained some additional damage, causing it to not be able to use the upper 32 bits of the 64-bit architecture. It's over my head on the motherboard there. I don't know. I researched along that avenue. I stumbled across a reference to a possible setting in the BIOS that would fix the motherboard in a 32-bit mode. I searched through the BIOS settings and could not find any setting that was remotely related to a bit mode of the motherboard. Finally, in another act of desperation, I selected the load default setup option in the BIOS and rebooted. I put the Windows 7 Ultimate 64-bit installed disk in the machine, and lo and behold, it installed perfectly, and the machine is humming along like it should. I don't know if you've run across this problem before, but I thought your listeners would find this interesting. I don't know what part of the BIOS was having the problem, but when I reloaded the default setting, that cleared up the problem. I would like to know what the cause was. Wow. Very hard to make that determination. I like your idea, and I like what you eventually found, which was reload the default settings for the BIOS. That was a great find. What option in the BIOS would cause the CPU, all the CPUs, to be pegged at 100%? I'm not sure. What BIOS was it? What version? And I'm not sure. What you may need to do is go to the forum of the manufacturer of the BIOS and check it out. Jason in the chat said the voltage. It's a very good idea. I'm wondering if the prior settings on your son's motherboard, was he trying to overclock it? Was there a voltage mismatch? Was there some incorrect settings where now you let it detect and go into the default mode of the CPU rather than tweaking, where a lot of people will go in and tweak and try to overclock or customize the settings for the CPU? And there's so many advanced settings in the BIOS. I, like you, like to run by the default, and I rarely tweak the BIOS for a motherboard. But that's very possible. Was your son trying to overclock it and you just stumbled onto that and you've reset it back to the defaults and now everything's working great? So I'm glad of the final solution, and I'm also glad to be able to share with everybody who's listening another option that you have if you're running into hardware problems where it does not hurt to change your BIOS settings to the factory defaults. But I'm going to add one more thing before you do that. Make sure you download and save the BIOS settings. If you can, there's got to be an option to save that. And if there's not, go to all the screens, get a digital camera, and take a picture of the screen, the settings, if that's even possible. I don't know if you're going to have the glare flashback from the screen. But make sure you definitely save all of your settings, because you were lucky that you were able to get back in with the default. But if there's a custom option for a RAID controller or something on the booting that was set by someone or the manufacturer that now you've just overridden, you may not be able to boot into your drive. Depending on the situation, this may not work for everybody, but it's certainly something to look at. Also, something I've been working with a client and with Dell, and we just flashed the BIOS to a newer version, and you want to be very careful when you're doing that. I hate that sometimes the tech support, when in doubt, flash the BIOS to the latest, greatest. That may or may not fix the problem. Unfortunately, it did not fix this problem where I have a client with his machine where we have ran every test that you could imagine. The Dell Diagnostic CD, we've ran MEM test. We've done everything. The hardware is clean. There is no problem with the hardware. There's no spyware on the system. I have now come to the conclusion that it is the operating system and something that has happened with Windows 7 that is causing this intermittent lockup. And I'm now at the point where we've expended so much time, it's better to just redo the system. This is a new computer. This computer is only a few months old. To have it spontaneously lock up once a week, sometimes twice a week, and there's no rhyme nor reason. We have nothing in the event log telling us. The power supplies are fine. The fans are fine. The CPU, I've checked everything. I'm at the point now, there's nothing left to do but redo the operating system. So, of course, we didn't get any CDs for that. I have Dell shipping out the CDs for us. I will follow up and let you know how I made out on that. Sometimes there's things that's happening that, you know, they drive us crazy and we're just not sure what's going on, especially when you can't determine whether it's hardware or software. Usually, the diagnostics and the tools that we talk about regularly on the show here, especially the Dell Diagnostic CD, which you can download for free and build the image. You could even gives you the option to boot from a USB key with the utilities. Great utilities that really puts all the hardware through the paces and can help diagnose if there's a particular hardware problem, because that would have been the easiest thing. And if that hardware problem would have reared its ugly head during those tests, then I could tell Dell, look, it's this item. Get out here and repair it. But we can't put our finger on it. So, you know, when in doubt, we're going to the operating system. I'm going to ask everybody a favor. If you purchase anything from Amazon or know anybody that purchases items from Amazon, send them to miketechshow.com, mikenation.net, and have them click on the big Amazon affiliate ad on the left-hand side of my website. Click on that. It'll bring you to Amazon. You can buy anything you want. Your price stays the same, but a commission comes back to the Mike Tech Show, and it helps support the show, and I greatly appreciate that. For everybody that's watching live on Ustream, next week I will have a different website for you to go to watch the show live. It's going to be the Tech Podcast Network live stream. I am now officially slated for 8 o'clock on Thursday nights to be viewed on the Tech Podcast Network live Ustream feed. I am going to do that next week. I will be tweeting it, Facebooking it, and I will let everybody know, and I'll put a note. I'm not sure if we're going to come here first to I'll figure it out. I want to do a test broadcast from there, and I will just let you know. Worst case, there'll be a message on the website. So when in doubt, go to miketechshow.com, and I will absolutely have the link for you for where you can log in for Ustream. That's it for tonight's show. I have some independent music. This is one of my favorite GarageBand songs from an independent artist, and the group is Beat and Path. And I've played this a long time ago, years ago, and played it a couple times, and I haven't heard it in so long that I wanted to share this with all the new listeners and everybody. It's a beautiful song, and it's called Goodbye Beautiful Day. Give a listen, and I know you're going to like it.
Just withers away.
That was Beat and Path and the song Goodbye Beautiful Day. And I will have a link to their website where you can download and acquire their music. Beautiful song. That's it. I hope you enjoyed the show. And I want to thank everybody for supporting the show, downloading the show, staying subscribed, spread the word, and let everybody know how to download and subscribe to the Mike Tech Show. I thank you so much for all your support. Talk to you next week, same time. I was going to say same channel, but a different channel. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to the Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.